group teaching is far superior. Far superior. You're training people to be village musicians, and they can go and play church because they're used to playing with other people and keeping a steady beat and following a director and all the skills we need.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
G'day everyone, and welcome back to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. You're listening to episode 103, and if you're one of my Inner Circle Piano Teaching Community members, a very special welcome to you. My name is Tim Topham, and I'm the host of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, and this is the place for your weekly dose of inspiration, ideas, and teaching strategies to help you be the best piano teacher that you can possibly be. Today's show notes and a full transcript are available right now at timtopham.com/episode103. The Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly sponsored by The Inner Circle, your one-stop online shop for piano teaching inspiration, training, lesson plans, business advice, and support. It's the place to get your piano teaching questions answered and to hang out with other teachers and music education experts from around the world. From Norway to New Zealand, from India to Idaho, or maybe Indiana, we'll help you build the studio of your dreams. And the great thing is that you can get access to top-rated video courses, including PianoFlix, How to Teach Pop Piano, my Notebook Beginners course, my Piano Studio Marketing course, How to Teach the 12-Bar Blues and Jazz Improv, and to be released very, very shortly. In fact, by the time this episode goes live, my 4-chord composing course, and then really excited to announce that in September, we're releasing our group teaching course, all about how to convert to group teaching, which works in really well with today's episode. The Inner Circle is a thriving community of dedicated, passionate teachers who are committed to giving their students the very best opportunities possible and sharing all their wins with the community. Find out how you can become a part of the Inner Circle at timtopham.com/community. And remember that you can take $100 off an annual membership locked in for as long as you're a member right now with the code PIANOPODCAST. Okay, my guest today began her group piano method 38 years ago when she could not find a suitable piano method for her studio or her students. Soon, other teachers began asking her to train them in the skill of group piano teaching, and they also wanted to purchase her piano method. So my guest's method is now sold to piano studios and schools all over the country and the world, and she's currently orchestrating her advanced music and writing screenplays. Welcome to the call today, Mayron Cole.
Hey, Tim. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Quickly, before we get started, tell me about this screenplay work that you're doing. This is a little bit of an unusual one. What have you decided to do?
Well, I love to write. I love to compose. I like to do everything. And about when I was 60 years old, I wrote my first screenplay, and it got optioned.
Wow.
And it was my first time out, and it won a screenwriting contest, and it was optioned. And then I started writing, just off and on when I had the time, the life story of Clara Schumann. And I'm doing a drama series, a long series of her life, and I'm loving every minute of it. I'm about halfway through with it.
Oh, good for you. Well, that's I don't know how you get the time to do that with everything else that you're doing. For those of you who aren't aware, Mayron Cole, the Mayron Cole group method, has been around for, as we say, almost 38 years. And we're going to dig into how it came about and what kind of things it offers, and the changes that piano teaching has gone through in the last 40 years or so. So, Mayron, group teaching is all the rage at the moment, but when you started back in 1979, you must have been a complete pioneer. How did your studio look when you first started teaching back then?
Well, I felt like a pioneer, Tim. I felt like Christopher Columbus getting ready to sail off the edge of the flat earth and crash into oblivion. I had to overcome a lot of hostility with a lot of teachers. It was not a good time, but I wasn't going to give up. And the way I got started, it's kind of strange. Across the street at that time, we had a house across the street from a church, and it was our church. And the choir director asked me if I could possibly teach some smaller children, like 10 years old to 12 years old, how to read rhythms and how to read notes, and that it would help in the choir program. And since we lived across the street, well, that was easy. And so they would come over. I had about seven or eight of them. And I didn't have a method. I just said, this is the way we're going to do it. And so I just sat them all down on the floor and I designed some theory board games. And first of all, I taught them how to count rhythms. And because I think that's the foundation of all music is rhythm. And I taught them 2/8 in that first lesson, quarters, half notes, dotted half notes, whole notes, and how to count and tap those rhythms. And they loved it. And for their questions to move on the theory game boards, I would say, now read and tap this rhythm. And they would sit there and tap, 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 and counting out loud. And they thought that was so much fun. And we mastered rhythm in one lesson. And the next lesson we mastered the keys on the keyboard, you know, the seven keys on the keyboard. And then I taught them everything I thought I was going to teach them, and we were through. And it was a free course. And I thought, well, I will start teaching you how to read notes. And I'm trying to remember how many exactly I had. I think I had seven or eight in that group. And we would go to the piano and I would show them, you know, this key, this note goes with this key on the piano. And that would be their questions in the games. Go to the piano and play the first two measures of this piece. And then they'd come back. Well, they just accelerated and loved it so much that it just exploded. And other parents wanted me to teach their children, and that's how it all got started.
Were you a private piano teacher before then?
Yes, I was. I majored in piano at Baylor University, and I'm a pianist born to be a pianist. That's all I know, Tim. I can hardly get across the street because all my knowledge is just piano playing. Yes, I was a piano teacher of private students, and I began to notice that these kids, their foundation was so phenomenal that if I were going to put them in a private lesson, they were already moving. And so I said to them, they wanted to pay now for lessons. They wanted to sign up for the fall. And I said, well, I don't know how many of you I will be able to give a private lesson to because I'm pretty well filled up. And one little girl said, Mrs. Cole, we've done so good for you. We thought you'd just keep us together as a class. Why are you making us give up our class? And it was very traumatic. And I said, well, then I'll keep you in a class, but I don't have any material for you, but I'll get material. So when the parents called up to sign up their children, I have a policy that I share with piano teachers all over the world. People, they pay out their school year tuition in 10 installments, and installments are always equal. So you have the same amount coming in every month. And the first installment, I used it and went out and bought four electronic pianos. And then I went to the music store to get a group piano teaching method, and there was not one.
Ah, yes. And that's where it all started.
That's right. Tim, I was sweating. I couldn't sleep that night. Well, I said to my husband, I'm going to have to move to Mexico because I've spent all their money on pianos.
And look, I know that many teachers, when they're transferring over to a group method or a group environment for the first time, they're sweating as well. But at least they've got support structures around them and materials to use and people who've gone before them like you. But, I mean, really, did you know that this was going to be a good approach when you first started? Or did you kind of just got the vibe from the students and went with it?
Well, here's what I thought. The first week after I would finish teaching, every time someone called, I said, your child's going to be going into a group lesson. I wasn't going to take any more private students. And I had like six seniors graduating. So I had 6 1-hour vacancies. And I was going to fill those with group students. And so when everyone called in, I would say, this is it. And if they didn't like it, then they, you know, were free to go find someone else because I wasn't going to bend. But after the first week of teaching group piano, I told my husband, I said, what if I'm just totally ruining these children for the rest of their lives? What if all their music is now just going to be a nightmare? And I've done it to them with this group piano class. And I began to notice that those kids were so excited to get to that class and so happy, and they were so enthusiastic, and they couldn't practice enough because they were going to get to play their piece in the piano class. And there wasn't any fear of performing because they were used to playing with other students. And they became so accustomed to keeping a perfect steady beat that their rhythm was far better than a privately taught student. And it was like night and day. And at that point, I said, I will never teach another child. Isolating a child in a private lesson is what I used to call it, because group teaching is far superior, far superior. You're training people to be village musicians, and they can go and play church because they're used to playing with other people and keeping a steady beat and following a director and all the skills we need.
Yeah, it's a much more holistic approach too, isn't it?
Yes.
It's so isolating having one student in one studio.
Yes.
There's no doubt that when I've done a lot of accompanying work, when you get those students that have learned individually, clarinet, violin, whatever it is, and piano's not the only exception there, so many of them struggle to keep a steady beat. It's so fundamental, isn't it?
It is. And what's sad is when it bothers them to hear another musician, like an organist or a soloist or a choir. In other words, their skills are not going to be used because they cannot work. 99% of the playing I have done all my life has been with other musicians, except for offertories or
right.
Maybe at church. But 90% has been other musicians, other choirs, whatever. I'm not a solo performer most of the time.
Now, I just want to go back to a couple of quick things that you said before. One of them was you mentioned monthly billing. Now, that would have been pretty pioneering back then as well, I would have thought.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
You really, we've got a lot to thank you for.
Tim, I'm thinking at any moment they're going to form a lynch mob out in my front yard and throw a rope over the tree because I changed so much. And it just snowballed. And every now and then a teacher will send me her studio policy. She's so proud of it. And it is verbatim the policy that I handed out at all these seminars that I gave around the country. But what I decided was, if you just want it kind of in a nutshell, my policy, and other teachers now are using the same policy, thank God, is I make the school year a separate entity. In other words, I don't teach 12 months. Most people want to take a school year term and then break for the summer. And so I divided the tuition up. I'm not going to tell anyone how much to charge, but let's just call out a number. Let's say $60 a month.
Right.
Then put a zero on the end of it, and the whole course is going to be $600.
Right. Okay.
And divide that into 10 equal payments. And that extra 10th payment you can pay for your retirement or to buy keyboards or whatever you need. But parents cannot deduct for a missed lesson. They cannot deduct for sickness. If they do, in my policy, it says you will be immediately kicked out of my class.
Wow.
They cannot have makeup lessons. There are no makeup lessons.
Hang on, but they can be sick. That's okay. But they're not going to get the money back, but you're not going to kick them out, right?
No. Okay. I just meant if they demanded to get a makeup lesson, they're not going to get one. And I have them sign that they agreed to those terms.
Mm.
So if I gave them a makeup lesson, then they're breaking the contract.
I understand. Yeah, there's lots of talk about this at the moment. There probably has been ever since you first did it yourself. I actually wrote a post about moving to monthly billing, which I did this year, and I will never go back again. And in actual fact, we've just put together a worksheet download to help with the calculations for teachers. So we're going to be releasing that probably next month. So do stay tuned for that, guys, on the blog. It's coming out soon. And the great thing, of course, which you wouldn't have had then, but we have now, is that you can plug those numbers into some software. I use My Music Staff, and all that happens by itself. I don't take checks. I don't take cash.
No.
It just all automatically goes into my bank account on a monthly basis. Parents don't worry about it. I don't worry about it. It's just so easy.
I also offer, when I taught in Houston for 48 years, and I offered them a whole year, a whole 9 months payment at one time, or two equal payments, or 10 monthly installments. And over half of my parents opted for the two payments per year or the one payment in entity. And I didn't have to that was just an unusual situation, but most of them didn't like to write out the monthly check.
Right, yeah. But now with credit cards being charged automatically,
it's so easy. Yeah. Then I moved into taking credit cards, so that was very easy.
Mm. So your first group lessons, apart from the very beginning ones, when you first set yourself up, it sounds like you decided to transfer your whole studio. It's like, from now on, I'm doing group. I've seen how effective it is. I'm not going to do some privates on the side and work with we people. We're just going to transfer the whole studio across. Is that right, firstly?
No, that's not right.
Oh, it's not right.
I kept my private students as they were. And then if every time I had someone quit, die, graduate, or move away.
Die?
Well, it can happen. Do you teach adults, Tim?
Yeah. I do have a few. They're not that old.
Listen, when they
carry on.
About learn to play a harp, be suspicious.
Okay.
That means they're not going to be around as long.
Oh, love it.
But anyway, sorry. Yeah. Most of the time I try to be quite serious. Yeah. So I'm going
No, I like it. You're making me laugh. It's good. Hopefully you're making our listeners laugh as well.
So anyway, every time I had a vacancy, I filled that with a class. But it turns out that my private lesson students could not be in classes. And the reason is they just were not used to working with other musicians. They could not keep that perfect steady beat. You can't fake your counting when you're playing with other people. Mm. And they just couldn't adjust to it. And so it was just better to let the attrition rate take them out at the top end of the scale and fill in from the bottom end. And it only took me about 4 years to be completely group. Because I had seniors and, you know, older students graduating out.
So for teachers who are currently teaching privately but loving the sound and everything they hear about group teaching, what would be the way you would do it today with all your experience? How would you go about transferring over to group?
All right. That's a problem. And I'll first tell you that transfer students themselves are a big problem. And the reason is, with my piano method, we have a really strong foundation of rhythm that's always taught first. And then we call it keyboard geography. They learn all the keys are on the keyboard without looking at their little hands. Because you can't sight read if your eyes are down on your hands. Your eyes have to be up on the music. And then the third step is learning to read music. Well, a lot of children that transferred into me through the years could not read 2/8 notes and a quarter note. In a complete rhythm. And I was having such problems with transfer students that I finally got to the point, and I know this is tacky, but I got to the point where I wouldn't take any transfer students. They had to be absolute beginners with me, or they had to agree to start at the bottom with me and review all that material. And so how can teachers do it if they've got, well, their own students are transfer students. Their own students would be transferring into groups. So that's still a transfer situation. That's tough. I'll tell you, the transfer students are the ones that'll bother you. If your teachers could have just vacant periods where they could take students who've never had any piano and start them with a good, solid group piano method, those students, 99% of the time, will do beautifully. It's the transfer students.
Right. So, I mean, you said you took 4 years to do a full transfer.
That was the attrition rate, you know, taking all the seniors and juniors and sophomores.
Right, okay. And I've certainly heard, there's plenty of teachers around who have successfully transitioned from a private to a group format. I certainly know that it takes a fair bit of planning, communicating with parents from very early on and, you know, really structuring the move across. And no doubt some parents will leave because they don't believe in it or don't like that idea. But, it's interesting that your kind of view is that the transfer students are some of the hardest ones. And if you're changing your studio from individual to group, that's effectively everyone is a transfer student.
Yes.
But I wonder if everyone is a transfer student, then you're kind of all beginners as well, including the teacher, where you're all starting something completely different, right?
All right. Here's what I would suggest. We put out a book called An Audition Book. And if you get students, even from your own studio or coming in from other teachers, you need to look at, well, what I sell, but I'm not in Australia, so you may have something like this down there. But we sell an audition book. Almost said an Australian
book.
Yeah. And in it is a piece of music from every level. My piano method goes from the kindergarten level up to college and even into college. So it's the largest span of teaching material there is. And so we have one piece of music from every level. And we suggest that you put the book in front of this little transfer student. And she says, oh, this first piece is easy. She zips. All right, let's turn the page. This one's easy, too. She's playing it beautifully. She turns the page. Now she says, where do I put my hands? And what does that really mean? That means she can't read the notes. And she's been reading fingering numbers.
Right.
So that right there tells you that student is in level whatever that piece was. That's level 3 or 4. And that's where that child should go.
I see. So you've actually got a framework around testing, I guess, in effect, a student's level and then where they should be placed in the
And I don't tell them any clues like, okay, now your left hand is on this low G. You know, I don't give them any clues.
Mm.
If they don't know that note, right? If they don't know that note, well, then I'm not going. That's where they need to start. They need to learn that note. I'm not going to tell them the note. I'm trying to see how much they know.
Right.
It's going to be very shocking to the parents. You might, at my studio that I had for so many years in Houston, the parent had to sit through the audition because I did not want that child to go out to the parent and say, she's just trying to hold me back. She says I need to be in level 2 and I can play Furleys.
Yep. And we all get those transfer students, don't
we? Yes, we do. Yeah. And so have the parents sit through that audition, and it's eye-opening to the parent when that child literally knows. I had one child audition with her parents sitting there, and she'd had 3 years of piano, and she literally did not know even middle C.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She had been taught totally to play by ear, and she couldn't read music. Well, my method is reading music.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it's a mix. It's holistic, as you said at the start. And, I mean, that student as well, like I'm all pro learning by ear, but, of course, it's good to do everything. We want to create well-rounded musicians, right?
And I have a good ear, but I can read music.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big – it's like reading a storybook by looking at the pictures.
Right, yeah.
Or can you read the words, you know? Well, I prefer that my students can read the words and not tell the story by looking at the pictures, which is playing by ear. Mm. I can play by ear. I have a good ear, but I definitely can read.
Now, when you first set up your studio, you said you went and bought 4 keyboards with your down payments from your lessons.
Yes.
Very clever.
Yes.
Those keyboards, they must have been...
they were expensive.
Like,
they were.
Milling machine, like massive, great thing.
They were.
Expensive, huge, heavy.
Tim, they were. They were the size of an upright piano made out of solid wood.
Wow.
They were made by Baldwin back then, and the benches were solid wood, and those things weighed a ton. They were not digital. They were, is the word acrosonic? Is that correct?
I haven't heard that word, acrosonic. Is it
analog,
not acoustic?
Analog,
oh, you mean no, acoustic,
analog.
Acoustic.
Yeah, no, it was analog. No, they were not acoustic. They were electric.
Really? Okay.
In fact, I used to go into a piano store there in Houston about once a month. I was always in that neighborhood, and I'd go in and say, do you have any electronic pianos? And they go, no, that hadn't been invented yet, Mrs. Cole. And then one day I walked past, and there it was in the window. And that's when I walked in and bought 4 of them.
Wow.
I later bought 2 more of a different brand, and they were digital. So I had 6.
Amazing.
Then later bought 2 more, and I had 8.
And now we can grab them for, you know, a pretty reasonable
nothing.
Price.
Nothing.
Let's face it, yeah.
You can get them off of eBay for
practically nothing. That's right. While we're on that, just quickly, do you feel that it's important to have weighted keys, 88 keys, pedal, proper stand, proper stools, adjustable benches, all that kind of stuff when you first get started?
No. Most teachers can't afford that.
Mm.
I would tell them to try to have the correct size key. Don't get a medium size key. In other words, a child has got to learn how far to reach for a 6 or whatever. And so be sure the keys are the correct width. But so far as weighted keys and all of that, this child is going to go home and play on something that came out of Aunt Agatha's attic. for an entire week. She's only going to be at the piano in your studio for about maybe 30 minutes at the most. And I had one teacher say that she demanded that every child in her studio had at least a grand piano. And I said, so how many students do you have now? And she said, one.
One? Oh, please. A grand piano. I don't even have a grand piano.
Well, we have
silly.
To be realistic. We have
absolutely.
To be realistic.
Yeah.
But the digital pianos are fun because they're always in tune and they can make great sounds, and some of them even have a recording ability, and you can play your little piece and listen to it.
Mm.
And there's just so much to do with the digital pianos.
Well, let's talk about technology. Are you still teaching, or have you stopped teaching now?
No, I am still teaching, but only a few. I'm teaching some adults.
Right, okay. So you would have seen the impact of technology over the last 30 years, right? What's been the impact on group teaching for technology, apart from the instruments, I guess?
Well, the instruments are the biggest part because it lowered the cost. You know, my cost was exorbitant when I started out. But those pianos earned me a fortune, so they were worth it. But now a teacher can start a studio and with much less. And so far as the height of the keyboard, they can go to an office supply shop and get tables that have telescope legs, and they can make that table the correct height and put these keyboards on top of it. You don't need stands for each keyboard. You just set it on that table. And benches, stools can be bought at, we buy them at a local drugstore here. They're just little stools, but they're the correct height. So, you know, you can go in without spending a lot of money. And make yourself a little business. It's quite a good business. I earned a good deal, and I recommend it. And I've given seminars before, Tim, when I first started out, some of the little blue-haired barracudas that you probably noticed in your travels about music teachers' conventions. Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
No, you can see my face. I'm like, what are you talking? What's a blue-haired barracuda?
Can't you imagine these little women with blue hair who are just angry about everything, especially if something is changing? You know, to change, that is just terrifying.
Is that a Texan phrase? I've never heard that before.
A friend of mine used it at a piano teacher's meeting one time, and I fell on the floor laughing, and I've used it ever since.
Right. I don't know. I don't think there's probably too many blue-haired barracudas listening to this, so I think you're safe in using that. Anyway, I get what you're talking about.
Right. And I had to fight that and say a good tuned digital piano is much better than an out-of-a-tune acoustic piano. Acoustic pianos are just what we've always had. It doesn't mean it's better. And I think Bach himself would have thoroughly loved all this new stuff.
Mm, so, I'm still making that argument today with teachers who say students must have an acoustic piano, otherwise I'm not teaching them. I don't think it's realistic in this day and age.
That's not the future of music. The future of music is digital.
Correct. I agree.
And we can, I've been orchestrating, as I told you in my little bio that I sent you, I've been orchestrating a lot of music, and they can play that on their little iPads or whatever, and they have this orchestra playing with them, and you get little tiny speakers and put them on your digital keyboard, and it's just wonderful.
So would you say the iPad has had an impact in your group teaching or others anyway?
No, but not mine. But my daughter teaches, and she has some of her students downloading the accompaniments that we provide with our music, and they put it up on their piano and play along with it. But they thoroughly love it. I'm teaching an older group of people, Tim.
Yeah, of course.
Some of them have blue hair.
Yeah. Now, tell me about the role of headphones in a group lesson.
I think every group piano teacher, should gather up all of the headphones that are in her studio and her little console up there that she's probably got on her main piano, and she should put them in a very strong garbage sack and put them out on the curb.
Right.
And the reason is headphones isolate the students. And if you're walking from piano to piano to piano, teaching one child at a time, basically you're teaching really badly some tiny, tiny little private piano lessons. You're not group teaching. Get rid of the headphones and let every child in that class hear what you are saying, because they're here at next class to understand what you're saying to everybody. And if little Johnny is having trouble with measure 13's rhythm, probably everybody's having trouble with it. And just stop and say, without calling his name, let's all look at measure 13. And now we're going to clap and count that rhythm, or however you want to do it, or tap it on a C key or whatever, and teach the entire class. Don't teach one child.
Right.
So.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. It's about the ensemble and the community and the collaboration.
Yes, it is. That is it. And, you know, were you ever in some sort of band or a choir or something?
At school I was, yeah.
Right. I was also in high school and college and played the trombone, incidentally. Loved the bass instruments. And the band director didn't stop and say, all right, Mayron, look at measure 14. Let's see you play just that by yourself. He never taught like that. The whole trombone section played that section. And I learned from the other kids sitting next to me, who were probably better musicians, how to count that measure. I learned from the other students. So don't isolate your students. Let them all learn together. And you'll actually be teaching group piano. Can I tell you a quick little aside? And you can cut this out, Tim.
No, you go for it. Well, it depends what you're about to say.
Well, I tried to clean it up. I am a Baptist, Tim. I'm going to be just as nice as I can be. I was in a studio in Mississippi. A teacher invited me to come, and there were about 30 or 40 teachers in that room. And she had a huge group piano situation going. I think she had like 15 digital keyboards in a big U shape in this gigantic room. And so before the seminar, she said to me, I want to tell you how I teach group before you start, because I'm so proud of it. It turned out, and I hope your teachers are listening to this part, she rented out a bench in that room to anybody that called. It didn't matter what level they were on or what they were studying or how old they were. If she had a spare bench, they got a 6:15 to 7 o'clock p.m. class. And next to them might be a child who's never had piano in their life. Next to them could be an old church pianist who just wants to get better. And I said, how do you do that? And she said, well, they all wear headphones. Mm-hmm. And I just sit up here in the front with my little console, and I just hit buttons. And I tune. They don't know when I'm going to tune in on their piano. And I said, but how do you know what exact measure that child is on when you flip the little button to her piano? Well, I don't. But, you know, I just listen. Then I go on to the next one. I was shocked. I am still in shock. That's probably been 40 years since that woman told that story. That is, I wanted to tell her that she needed to start writing out refund checks.
Right.
Because those children were not being taught group piano. You want to put everybody who is at the same level of knowledge in one class.
Right.
And you teach to that class.
I was going to ask you about ages and abilities and how you should structure your classes. Mm-hmm. So should it be more or less the same age kids, so they, you know, hanging out with their peers? What if they're completely different abilities, though?
Well, that's just it. The first year, you don't know if they've never had any piano, what their abilities are. So I tried to put all, say, seven-year-olds. And I only used one-year age difference. In other words, 7 and 8-year-olds or 8 and 9-year-olds. I wouldn't put a 7-year-old with a 10-year-old.
Okay.
Don't have more than a one-year spread in there. Six-year-olds should be kept by themselves. It's like trying to get a handful of worms to walk in a straight line together.
What a great analogy.
Oh, they have so much fun. They are hard to control. And then seven-year-olds can be like that also. Some of them are very immature. Eight-year-olds are beginning to understand that you track left to right, and, you know, they understand that, and they understand sitting in that bench until you tell them to get up, because they've been in school. Most of them have been. But I don't put more than 1 year age difference between them, like 9 and 10-year-olds,
right,
or 10 and 11-year-olds. But after the first year, you can usually see that this 7-year-old is just playing everybody under the table, and she really should be with the 9-year-olds. But they are ahead of her, and they are about, say, 50 pages ahead of her in their book, because the older the child is, the faster they're going to go.
Mm.
So what do you do to get this 7-year-old caught up so she, in the fall, can join this 9-year-old class? I have to teach her some private lessons. and pull her up. And I might give her 10 pages per lesson. You know, she's going to move real quick. She's right. going to catch that group.
Mm.
I also had a situation where a little boy was going to be put into another class because he was so much better, and he threw an absolute fit. The only reason he was there was because his best friend was in that class with him. And if he had to move, he was quitting.
Mm.
So you've got to listen to that too.
Now, could you take us through, just briefly, I know this could go very detailed, but just briefly, what does a class look like? So how long is it? And when they first walk in, what do you do? What's the bulk of the lesson? How do you wrap it up?
All right. I'd be glad to. I used to teach hour classes, and that was too long for small children. 45 minutes is how long my classes are. And the older they got, like when they got up to into my advanced levels, like 7, 8, and 9, then I had hour classes because those kids were way up there. They're playing probably better than most piano teachers could play when they're in that level. And so I gave them an hour lesson. Well, I shouldn't have said that, but that's some of them can be quite good. And but the little ones, I changed it to 45 minutes. You cannot have parents coming in talking to you between classes. If any parent wants to talk to you, they have to email it to you or text it to you. You cannot pause between classes. They'll take up all your time.
Mm-hmm.
So do not allow that. And let's see, what was the other part of your question?
So when the kids come in, is there some games, scales, pieces? What order do you do things in?
I divide the class up into, and these are all in our teacher manuals. We tell them, a teacher, exactly how to do it. But we have new music time, old music time, theory game time, and what was the last one? Oh, they work their theory worksheets. That's the last one.
Right.
So it's new music, old music, theory game time, and theory worksheet time. And I, for 45 minutes, I had to figure out, you know, how I'm going to do that.
Right,
sometimes if I'm pushed for time, I cut out the theory worksheets and they do those at home.
Right. And is there technique in there somewhere?
The older children do scales, yes, but we don't do them at a young age because I can't see any point in it.
Okay, understood. All right, so we'll start wrapping up. Have you got some top tips for teachers who have, let's say they've already set up some group classes, some things you've got, you know, 40 years of experience teaching these classes, some either class management ideas or a really awesome game that you always like playing with your students or any top tips for teachers?
Tim. All right. First of all, no headphones.
Mm-hmm.
Do not teach one child at a time and then walk to the next piano and teach one child at a time. That is not group teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's the way they were probably trained, but that's not group teaching. And let's see what else. I made up all my own theory games because, you know, I was out there by myself. And we still use them. We still sell them. I wish you were in the United States and we could sell you some of our games.
Well, your resources are all online, though, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
And
they are.
Aren't they downloadable?
Yes.
Right.
And speaking of that, Tim, I wish you would call me back in the first week in December because we're going to be making a tremendous announcement that I think your readers, your listeners would enjoy.
Right. Okay. You're going to give us a sneak peek first. You've heard it first on the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast.
They will. Yes, you will hear it first. I can't tell you what it is.
Can't tell me now. Okay.
No, I wish I could. It is so exciting. So anyway, if you ever interview me again, and I know after today's interview, you might be in what we call a recovery program.
No. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
But if you come out of that recovery program, yeah.
Right.
And we'll have another interview someday.
All right. So you better tell us, you've mentioned, obviously, you have a method. In fact, your website has, it must have more than 100 things on it. I was having a look through it the other day. Tell us,
huge,
what have you got for teachers and where can they find this online?
We have teacher manuals, how to teach. We have I'll have to check on this. I may be saying something that's not true, but some of them can be downloaded onto your email so that we don't have to mail them to you.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. So we can't get them in Australia down here or Norway for that matter. Right.
Right. My daughter would be the one that would say she can do that because she's our computer guru, but we have everything. So if they'll go to MC, my initials, because, you know, I didn't think anyone could spell me wrong. So I put my initials, mcpiano.com.
mcpiano.com. Brilliant.
Right. And we will, I will find out if we can download a teacher manual onto the, you know, onto their email.
Right.
And
yes.
That would be the fast way for them to get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, I'd be certainly saying to you, if you've got great information out there, there's no reason why not in this day and age, if you've already got a website, that you can't be selling it worldwide and just doing it all as downloads. I think it's a great business thing for you if you're not doing that more widely already.
Well, we need to. We need to be in Australia. We had a customer one time in Australia.
Well, you might just get a few more now. We'll see how we go.
I think she ran out screaming somewhere, though, the less they saw her.
Did you? Well, hang on. Was that after talking to you or after teaching a group lesson? Because I know what I'm doing after this conversation. No, look, Mayron, it's been an absolute pleasure to spend some time with you. Thank you very much for coming on the show today. And thank you for your pioneering ways that we're all enjoying now.
Well, I'm so glad they're doing it, and I wish you the best, Tim. You're a lot of fun.
Thank you very much. So for full show notes and the transcript of today's episode, what a hoot Mayron was to talk to. I don't know if you guys use that expression over there, but yeah, it was great fun. You'll find the links for today's episode at timtopham.com/episode103. And I'm very excited to let you know that next week we're talking to the one and only Forrest Kinney about his creative approach to teaching and particularly his four creative arts. If you haven't heard about Forrest, this is an episode not to miss. Incredibly creative human and a brilliant piano teacher. So stay tuned for that. Great to share today's episode with you. Thank you one more time, Mayron, for being on the show. And I'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Best wishes to you. Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that will conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.